Let us fight for the ideals we hold dear, and let us always remember, when we fight, we win.
Win. Well, at the end of this week, Vice President Kamala Harris will be nominated for the highest office in the land by the Democrat National Committee, despite not a single vote being cast for her in this election. Now, the media might be accepting of this, but are the American people? I'm Sky Nell Hughes, and this is Perspective. Just before the Democratic National Convention began, the party's platform was released to the public. Now, it begins with a land acknowledgement, declaring the convention is being held on lands once belonging to Native Americans. It is critical of companies, which they claim are guilty of price gouging. It defends surgery and drug treatments for transgender youth, without specifying the age at which children should be provided such surgeries, and states, we must continue to secure the U.S. southern border. Now, on the international stage, the platform opposes Russia, but does not talk about peace talks in either Ukraine or the Middle East, and takes credit for deterring the Houthis. And in what I consider to be a very bold move, the platform actually boasts that President Biden ended America's longest war, bringing our troops home from Afghanistan. Now, there are several other traditional Democratic positions in the platform, but what is surprisingly missing is the mention of the issue of transgender sports and the question of biological males participating in women's sporting activities, as well as the support for President Biden's recent plans to reform the Supreme Court by imposing term limits. But the platform is just one part of the party's happening in Chicago, as the final goal is to show solidarity behind the newly formed campaign team of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. So let's discuss this week's events at the Democratic National Convention with our esteemed panel. You have Steve Malzberg, political analyst and talk show host, Dr. Van Mobley, managing partner, Old Thiensville Landmark LLC, and Jamal Thomas, political commentator and radio host. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen. I know all of you are probably just as tired as I am after staying up until late in the night watching all of the events that are happening at the DNC these past 2 days. But I want to actually go back to Monday and the current president and the one who has been on the ballot for this campaign season. It was a very emotional entrance. And at one point in Biden's speech, he lost his train of thought and the crowd just began cheering, "Thank you, Joe." Many times he stumbled over his words.
Women are not without electrical, not allowed, not without electoral or political power. No kidding.
Dr. Mobley, you're the new one to this stage. I've got to start off with you. Did President Biden do the job he was supposed to do and tell Americans, make them feel comfortable in their vote for Kamala Harris?
No. What he did is he reminded them that the Democratic Party had nominated a man who can barely speak to be president. And then the Democratic Party, which cries out for democracy, had in fact undermined the democratic process by launching a coup against a man who'd been nominated to be president and imposing a universally disliked candidate, Ms. Harris.
Jamal, a lot of the criticism that's coming off of President Biden's speech, while some have said it was a hero's goodbye, a lot of it said it was kind of like he was giving his own eulogy for his own political funeral. Do you agree with how the President Biden, did he give a good lasting impression, the final impression that probably the American people will have of him?
Well, it sounds like two things were taking place. I radically disagree with the last guest. Look, Joe Biden basically gave an affirmation of his agenda. I mean, I'm not a Democrat, but it sounded like two things were taking place. One, it was a send-off for Joe Biden. And part of it was, thank you, Joe, for stepping down because we were going to get crushed if you did not. Also, let's be very clear. There are no such thing as Joe Biden voters. There are people who would vote for Joe Biden if it was a dead, cold body, and they would still vote for it if it had a D beside it. But I think the proof of that is the moment that Joe Biden got out the race, immediately it went over to Kamala, and immediately her numbers went up with a certain amount of momentum. Yes, she's avoiding talking to the press. But again, when Donald Trump was in a similar position, Donald Trump did the exact same thing. If you remember, after Donald Trump crushed Joe Biden in that debate, that apocalyptic debate, what happened? Joe Biden started getting eaten alive by mainstream media, and Trump was nowhere to be found. He basically said, if they're going to eat him alive, I will let them eat him alive. I don't need to be a part of this particular process. Well, same difference. The media has given her a glow. It was almost like a soul leaving a body. All of the condemnation that they had for Joe Biden magically vanished. The moment that Joe Biden dropped out and Kamala Harris took over, she would take credit for everything that is positive, and she would try to defer or at the very least leave behind everything that's not. And the media has given her a pass on it. So she's using the media and what they've given her to get as far as she can up to the point of the election.
Well, I think we all three can agree that the media gives her a lot. And that's where I'm going to bring Malzberg in, because Steve looks a lot at what's going on in the media and the coverage of it. Were you surprised to see Kamala Harris make an appearance on the first night? It's extremely unusual. I mean, Trump came in and went over to the box. He showed that he was still there. He had the Band-Aid on his ear. Do you think it's odd to have, but she actually grabbed the microphone up on stage and she spoke before everybody pretty much on the primetime. She used that moment to thank Biden. She said this.
I want to kick us off by celebrating our incredible president, Joe Biden. Joe, thank you for your historic leadership, for your lifetime of service to our nation, and for all you will continue to do. We are forever grateful to you.
Okay, so are they forever grateful to him, or are they more grateful that he got out of the way with enough time for them to get the name changed on the ballot? Steve?
Well, I think the sick irony here is that, you know, she did not get one vote. And I love the left when they say, oh, yeah, the people in the primaries voted for the ticket. No, they didn't vote for the ticket. Her name was not on the ballot at all. But that's beside the point. Also, reportedly, she was instrumental because when they went to Joe Biden, reportedly, and said, Joe, you got to go, they implied or said Kamala will invoke the 25th Amendment if you don't. So there you go. So there she is. Now, I'm not surprised she came out. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with saying her not doing a press conference or an interview for, you know, 30 days or more is the same as Donald Trump in the immediate aftermath of the debate backing off for a day or two. I mean, that's I don't get that analogy at all. Donald Trump wasn't running away. Donald Trump was letting him stew in his own juices, which is smart politics. Kamala knows she'll get clobbered if she does a fair interview or a fair press conference, because she doesn't know anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting you mentioned fair, because now we know that Kamala Harris is backing out of the actual debate that was going to happen on Fox News. Jamal, I want to get you in here. But at the same time, I've got to look at Dr. Mobley. I've got to ask you, Mobley, you know, should Harris, it's really hard to try to distance herself and take down and say that she's going to create a different administration when it's still hers currently. So were Democrats, as was pointed out by Jamal, were Democrats rejecting the party or the person at the top of the ticket, which caused Harris to replace Biden at the top?
Well, I think what they were doing is they were responding to some very bad numbers that they knew that they were going to lose. They're still going to lose. But what you have there is, and I agree that for Democrats, it doesn't matter who you put at the top. You could put a dead dog, or as we used to say in Alabama where I grew up, a yellow dog. So if you can put a yellow dog up, you can put up whoever you want. But then I would say, why would they pick Kamala? I mean, you know, Kamala is associated with these failed policies. If they're not hers, she was in the room where they were adopted. They're not working. The American people have rejected them. She's in a very bad position. And I think that the bundle of contradictions that is the modern Democratic Party will collapse before the election. So I'm looking for Donald Trump to do very well, and J.D. Vance.
Well, that's the thing, Jamal, because you have to wonder how much the Democrats, you know, they sound rah-rah. They're definitely showing more energy for her than they showed for Biden, even all the way back to 2020. But they didn't even revamp the DNC policy platform for Kamala. It still talked about Biden's second term. None of Kamala's, what few things we know about her economic policies that she just rolled out, are included. So does this make it hard to separate from the high inflation, failed Bidenomics of a Biden-Harris ticket when it's still the party platform as stated and voted on just a few days ago?
Look, I kind of agree with you. I don't think she is trying to do this hard separation from Joe Biden, per se. At very least, it doesn't seem like it. It seems like what she's basically trying to do, I mean, granted, she gets in, there's only a few months left over. And I have to disagree with your guess. It is exactly the same thing that Donald Trump did, meaning you can take a perspective of something that is good for America, which is true, which is, yeah, you should have more debates. Yes, you be active talking to the media. Or you could take a perspective that is what is in your personal best interest. My point is that either with the debates in the primary, where Donald Trump decided that is the B League, I don't need to get into the debates because it is not in my personal best interest. I am winning by 40 points. I can only go down. So no, I'm not going to debate DeSantis and Nikki Haley. And he took that policy all the way through the primaries, where he eventually wins and he carries on. I'm pointing out that when Donald Trump was in the exact same position where he took something that was his advantage, he took that advantage, whether it was after Joe Biden getting eaten alive or, for that matter, in the debates. The difference now is, again, manifestly untrue what the previous guest said. The reality of it is, look, I'm not a fan of Kamala Harris. And I agree with all of you that there's a trick of media that took place where, up to the point where she got in, it was, well, clearly Kamala Harris can't be the person. Clearly Kamala Harris is the worst case scenario. And then she gets in and all of a sudden, oh my God, she's the greatest thing ever. That's the Obama 2.0. But that has translated into a certain momentum. And you can see it from where Joe Biden was, where it was apocalyptic. I mean, the reason that Nancy Pelosi got involved is because so many Democrats were coming to Nancy Pelosi and says, I'm going to lose. We're going to lose. All of these liberals, we're going to lose our seats. They expected Donald Trump to beat Joe Biden, even winning the popular vote, which I don't remember the last time a Republican won the popular vote.
Okay, but tomorrow, so, let me pause you on that. I thought the reason why they took him out is they were worried about his health. I thought that was what we were told. They were worried about Joe Biden's mental state and his health was the reason why they took him off the ballot.
Come on. Even Joe Biden admits this in the interviews after the fact, basically saying that they were deeply concerned that the loss was going to be apocalyptic and that he was going to basically take down the Democratic Party with him, in which case he gets out. Kamala Harris comes in, love and light. It's a campaign about joy, and of course, $1 billion. I guess my point is this, just to close it. At the very end of the day, regardless of what I think about Kamala Harris, as a flat fact, it does seem that she has developed a certain momentum that just was not there with Joe Biden. Joe Biden was, you had the African-American vote, you had the young vote that was going to Trump. Like, all of these demographics seem to be moving in a particular direction that it seemed to be changed with Kamala Harris in. Will it last?
Well, that's
okay. I think Donald Trump.
You accelerate for a moment when you go over a cliff.
That's an interesting way of looking. And on that, talking about going over a cliff, we're going to take a break because I know that Steve is over there filled with joy right now, and he wants to express his joy. So hold on. We're going to get through the break. Dr. Mobley, Jamal, Steve, stay right there, because when we come back, while there are plenty of newsworthy headlines being produced from inside the United Center, the activity outside is also grabbing some of the attention. We're going to continue our discussion with our very joyous panel after the break. Welcome back to Perspective. I'm your host, Scotty Nell Hughes. Now, the Democratic National Convention, well, it kicked off on Monday as Gaza protests threatened to overshadow a week of what the Democrats were hoping to be a show of unity for Vice President Kamala Harris as the party's nominee for president. Now, this is similar to other left-leaning groups getting creative in their marketing and incentives to show the party their support. So to discuss all this, I want to bring back into this conversation our panel. Steve Malzberg, political analyst and talk show host, the joyous self himself. Dr. Van Mobley, managing partner, Old Thingsville Landmark LLC. And of course, Jamal Thomas, political commentator and radio host. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen. I mean, it's been an interesting week. Obviously, a few weeks ago was the RNC. Now it's time to put the spotlight on the DNC. Oddly enough, I'm hearing a lot of talk about Trump. In fact, I feel like most of the media is still talking about Trump because that's what they're hearing on stage. But one of the people I was actually surprised to be one of the first to really bring up his name was Hillary Clinton. After the assassination attempt on Donald Trump, there was President Joe Biden, and he came out and actually called for a lowering of political temperatures. But Hillary Clinton Monday night at the DNC said this.
As a prosecutor, Kamala locked up murderers and drug traffickers. She will never rest in defense of our freedom and safety. Donald Trump fell asleep at his own trial, and when he woke up, he made his own kind of history, the first person to run for president with 34 felony convictions.
Her grin said it all. Steve Malzberg, you know, that crowd cheering "lock him up" was very reminiscent of the Trump rallies as well as the RNC in 2016, which one of the famous lines were chanting "lock her up," referencing Hillary Clinton. So do you think this is lowering the temperature, or is this fair game for all of the Democrats?
It's fair game, and they don't have any desire to lower the temperature. I mean, you say Joe Biden, said we should come together as a nation. He says that out of one side of his mouth, and then he says, you know, beat the hell out of them, and I'd like to take them behind the gym and beat the hell out of them. I mean, they're crazy, and they're the ones who promote violent rhetoric. You had Cory Booker say, "My testosterone makes me want to punch him in the face." You had Robert De Niro, who did ads for Joe Biden, say, "I'd like to punch him." You had the Maxine Waters say, "Get in their face. Don't give them any rest about Trump's cabinet." It goes on and on and on and on. Schumer, you won't know what hit you. Gorsuch, you won't know what hit you. Kavanaugh. They're the ones with the violent rhetoric, and the media makes believe it never happened. But Hillary was getting her little revenge. Good, she had her little moment in the sun. She got a good standing ovation, I will say that. But when Biden came out, and spoke, all he did was lie, and the media lets them lie, and that's the problem here. They have to fight back on the lies. He doesn't say he's going to ban abortion. He says the opposite. He doesn't say he's going to end Social Security and Medicare. He says the opposite. He didn't say there'd be a bloodbath if he loses. He was talking about economically, and he never did say good people on both sides with references to Nazis and white supremacists. 50 seconds later, unprompted, in the same video, same press conference, he said, "And of course, I'm not talking about the white supremacists and the neo-Nazis. They should be condemned always." So the whole thing is a fantasy. The whole thing is a farce enabled by the media.
Well, it's interesting you talk about the media. I even had a friend today in the media text me and say, "There's so much love here compared to the hate I saw at the RNC." And I asked him just to look outside his hotel window, because there in Chicago, public safety and security, still a top three issue on voters' minds. But in Chicago, where the DNC is being held, 30 people were shot just this last weekend. 5 were killed. So I got to ask you, Dr. Mobley, do Democrats address this issue, and how? I mean, typically they look to the availability of guns as the issue. However, Chicago is a city with one of the strictest sets of gun laws.
Well, once again, it's a part of the contradictions that they're involved in. They really benefit, from the attempt to use the violence as an intimidation factor. But in this case, the American people are tired of it. The attacks on Trump by the railroading and through the court system didn't work when Biden was the president. It won't work when Kamala Harris is the nominee. They haven't changed anything other than the titular head of their mob, more so than a party these days. And they're going to suffer the penalty for it. The people are going to vote for Trump because they do like his policies. He was a successful president. And we can't stand any more of the failures that have been generated by Biden and Harris, whether or not they're good, bad, or indifferent as people.
It's interesting you talk about the protests and everything going on. Jamal, I know you want to address this, and I want to give you the opportunity, because there are these large protests that are happening outside the tightly secured DNC. And that would be those actually protesting the Biden-Harris. I think it's their wishy-washy dual support, not sticking to one side of both sides in this Gaza conflict. Shouldn't the protesters see Kamala Harris's choice of a running mate be a sign that she's probably more on the side of the Palestinians? Therefore, why are they protesting?
That answer is no. Absolutely not. Let me start at a different place. No, Kamala Harris has shown no distinction between Joe Biden and any of the policies that Joe Biden has gone with. And the reality of it is, this is happening under Joe Biden. I don't really care this idea of what Trump may do in this situation. This is happening under a Democratic president. And if you're okay with 17,000 kids being murdered under a Democratic president, then, it's like this notion that, Trump is going to be worse. Yeah, but you've enshrined this type of behavior, basically saying it is okay for a Democratic president to behave in this way. So, no, I don't think Kamala Harris has done anything. They act like she's gone rogue even though she's only articulated a policy of Joe Biden. But one thing, and it may surprise you on this, Hillary Clinton is fascinating to give that speech. I would agree with both of you that they did try to railroad Donald Trump in those criminal trials. The idea that they're saying that they don't have to even choose the primary crime that they're trying to convict Donald Trump with, whether it's an FEC violation or tax violation, basically you choose whatever crime you want, and then take that and pivot and say that this was in pursuant of something else, of a larger crime. And what they use, a business record, a hush money payment to a porn star, is what they use to basically go after the president of the United States. Hillary Clinton, and I'm glad you played that clip. If you remember, Hillary Clinton did the exact same thing. She ends up getting a dossier. She puts it on as a legal expense. She's in New York when it happens. The FEC gives her a fine. Everything is fine. Nobody says anything. Nobody tries to prosecute Hillary Clinton. But Donald Trump, they turn around and say, oh, this is a violation. Maybe we could put Donald Trump in prison. That is outrageous. That is a literal intervention into the political system and basically trying to railroad the political opponent. By the same token, this notion of violence, I mean, for God's sake, I would totally agree with you that political violence, we shouldn't have people out there fighting cops like they were on January 6th. We shouldn't have people putting cops in the hospital and everything else. I agree with you on that totally. I don't want to see that at any of those protests, whether it is for a Democratic cause or what this for a cause that Republicans care about.
Well, let's talk about another kind of protest.
I would agree
that's
on that. Could I fill in something there?
Absolutely.
I live in a spot, many of my neighbors are Democrats and they're wonderful people and they're gentle people and they don't agree with violence or anything along those lines,
which is
why Ms. Harris is in deep trouble because her party is the party now of violent demonstrations.
Well, that's interesting. The violent demonstrations, you know, while I have you on here, Dr. Mobley, Planned Parenthood actually decided to get creative. And I want to get your take on this real quick, because free vasectomies as well as abortion medications at the DNC. I mean, they can understand that abortion's a winning issue for them. But do you think this is a good marketing strategy?
No, I don't. Because once again, I would just go back to, many Democrats, no one rejoices at an abortion. And that's the same for many Democrats as well. So that sort of thing is not going to fly very well for them.
Well, across the street, you can get a free taco if you got a vasectomy. So, I mean, that's kind of how I feel like they're cheapening not only the healthcare service that's being provided. And real quick, Steve, before I let you go, last question. Project 2025 is being projected up on the Trump Tower. Once again, Trump has denounced it. Does that not, once again, bring Trump into the conversation? Shouldn't they be focused on getting the brand of Harris being the priority?
Well, absolutely. But they're going to attack Trump. And again, it's a lie because, like you said, he's disassociated himself from it. But they keep bringing it up. By the way, these protesters, pro-Hamas. Think about that. It's like pro-Nazi. They're not just protesters. They beat up cops at the Monday night. They broke down barriers. They're destroying businesses. Pro-Hamas.
And that right there is, I'm going to have to end it because we could do a whole show on exactly. And you know what? You just gave me an idea for one. I want to thank you, all three of you, for joining me today on this conversation. We will continue it because there's going to be a lot more content as this election year continues. You know, Joe Biden attended his first DNC in the city of Miami in 1972. He was a spectator. His 12th is in 2020, was hardly traditional as horn honked, applauding his acceptance of the nomination. And the country at that point was in the midst of a global pandemic. Now, at his 13th, President Biden has one job, and that was to convincingly pass the torch to Kamala Harris after only serving a single term. Is the energy just for show? As this is the party that 4 years ago was quick to cut their now nominee as even an option pretty soon into the race. The same party that tried to portray a more moderate party to attract Trump deflectors. Yet one of the more progressive members of the Senate and now the governor is now going to try to be their two leaders. By the end of this week, Biden will be just a blip in the history books. However, the events that found him replaced will forever haunt any Democrat running for office as a possibility that could happen to them. But hey, that's just my perspective. I'm Skynell Hughes. Thanks for watching.